to open the Senate Education and General Government Committee, and I would like to open a public hearing on Senate Bill 964.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 964 reduces the number of education service districts from 21 to 11 as of July 1st, 2011, directs the State Board of Education to enter an order to change the boundaries of existing ESDs. It permits each new ESD to have more than one administrative office, and it provides for the election of boards of directors for each new ESD.
Okay, we have Ed Dennis from the department, and we have the bank superintendent. Why don't you join him? Thank you, gentlemen, for being here.
Thank you.
I'd start with your name.
Good afternoon. My name is Ed Dennis, Deputy Superintendent, Oregon Department of Education.
And I'm Marv Ott. I'm Superintendent of the Banks School District.
Before we go any further, colleagues, I just want you to know my name is on this bill. I can't claim any authorship or pride of authorship. It was because of a hiccup in LC, and in order to get it to us today, that's what we had to do. So go ahead, Mr. Dennis.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair House, members of the committee. The past couple of weeks, the new United States Secretary of Education has shared his boss's vision for education in our country. And President Obama's vision asserts that we need to come up with more common sets of standards, and they need to be benchmarked to international expectations. A lot of people have been talking about that for a long time. This president is going to put his stimulus dollars behind it and his presidency behind it. That's really the direction we're headed as a country, then systemic reform is crucial, and this bill in part speaks to some of that reform. We've argued for a long time about local control, and in a global or national scheme, we've got to have systems that are capable and skilled at implementing change. We've got to rethink what's centralized or decentralized. So that's why I think some folks have come up with this concept. I want to take a moment away from my testimony now to identify that I think there's, I don't know how many bills there are around the ESD issue this session. I think there's many of them. I think you may find that this is the one bill that could have an opportunity or a chance to move forward, to get some support from ESD folks, to get some support from district people. This bill was informed by conversations with those said folks. I think everybody's going to have a different point of view on some of the specifics in the bill, but I think that this is one that has, if you will, some very smart people who think about these things every day and work in this field behind it. If you look at the expansion of No Child Left Behind, and No Child Left Behind was just the new name that the president and the last president and the Congress named it, that act, which has been around since President Johnson's time, came with an unprecedented vision and direction for the country to move forward. Oregon's capacity has been strained, as many states have been, in order to fully implement that mandate. At about that same time, the Department of Education got a grant from the Gates Foundation that we spent on an Annenberg study, which came in and looked at, followed up on a Gibson report, which some of you are familiar with, and it looked at critical issues around approaching school improvement in the state. One of the findings in the report was that we need to do a much better job of coordinating between multiple levels, K-12, community colleges, higher ed, ESDs, and within the K-12 community only, the department, ESDs, and districts. So we created a Education Enterprise Steering Committee called EESC, and we've been working, and that's one of the ways we've been working to improve our coordination. One of the realities in both of those, the conclusions that many of us have drawn from both of those reports, is that Oregon needs a strong regional system to help support student success in the state using a continuous improvement model. Same thing for professional development, for technology, for education improvement, for special needs kids, and for perhaps for administrative work. Currently, as an example, the department addresses statewide special education needs using only 9 contractors, and this model's worked well. It is, I would be remiss if I didn't say it wasn't underfunded at this point. But to move forward in the arenas of school improvement, technology, and administrative services, Oregon needs a group of ESDs that have the capacity to make sure that all students and school districts have equitable access to services. We believe that a system of only 10 to 12 ESDs instead of the current 20 would create ESDs that have enough capacity to be true partners. Currently, we have some ESDs that only provide a handful of services via their local service plan, while other ESDs can provide many more services. I hope Superintendent Ott gets an opportunity to talk to you a little bit about that in a little bit more detail when I'm done, because he can speak to you from a superintendent's perspective who's been in a relatively small ESD and in a larger ESD, and what kind of services he could rely on, and what kind of services he had to pay for, and what kind of services came from the ESD without him having to pay for them. Finally, the department is supportive of this bill with a few changes. We believe that it would be better if you went ahead and told us which ones will get annexed and to whom, as opposed to giving that task to the state board and to the department. If you give us that task, if this bill should move forward, we will take it up. We will do it. But we just think it would be easier and faster if you went ahead and said so. I do want to say one thing also, just to make a point, that I think in this economically difficult time and tough budget time, a lot of folks are looking at this as a budget solution only. I'm not saying any of you are doing that, but I think folks assume that that's the way we're looking at it. And I want to be very clear that for me, it really couldn't be any more different. It's really about the capacity when you're so small to deliver the services that are needed by your constituent districts, by the kids in those districts. If you're a little larger and you get to that, you know, that capacity level, then it's not just a dollar for dollar increase or a person for person increase. It's an exponential increase in the opportunities you have as a district. You know, I'm showing some folks around here who are presenting in the building today from Washington State. One of them's from Washington State. They've got twice as many school kids. They've got 9 ESDs. It's a little bit different model, so it's not an apples-to-apples exactly comparison, but it's a fact worth noting. And then the rest of my, in summary, on my testimony, just sort of remakes some of these points. And I guess the last thing I would say is that if this is a question a lot of folks have been asking for some time, there was a run at this a couple sessions ago, and I'm hopeful that for a whole host of reasons that this could be the session that we could make some progress on this concept. Thank you very much for your service.
Thank you, Mr. Rott.
Well, good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to be here and to speak to you, Chair Haas and the rest of the committee. As a superintendent in a small district, and I used to be a superintendent in a smaller district that was part of a small ESD, and there were a lot of services that were, what I will say, available, but not necessarily provided to me. The core services, and I'm sure you understand the difference between the core services and the contracted services. The ESD provides core services to all of the districts, but then there are related services that are contracted where we have to pay for those, but they make them available to us. And in the smaller district, the smaller ESD, many of those were things that I had to pay for. And as a small district, that was just really burdensome. And now that I'm a part of the Washington County and the regional Northwest Regional ESD, many of those contracted services are now core services where I get them without having to pay more for them. And that's tremendous. And in addition to, and I'll mention that I was involved in the Annenberg project that Dennis mentioned, supporting the ESDs and the staff development, the technology, and all of those things that small districts could not provide for themselves. But through the ESD and that group power, that group combination of money, can get that all done, and the small districts definitely benefit from that, and I can't emphasize that more.
Okay, thanks. Questions, senators? Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ed, I'm drawn to your statement on page 2 at the end of the first paragraph. Currently, we have some ESDs that only provide a handful of services via their local service plan, while other larger ESDs can provide many more services. My question is, if we're able to I'm searching for a word. Collapse is not the right word, okay?
Consolidate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Collapse has a bad connotation. But anyway, consolidate. Will we be able to offer a more uniform level of service to those districts that presently do not have the same level of service as some of the larger districts?
Chair Haas, Senator Morse, I believe the answer is yes, and that's born through experience. Superintendent Ott could speak to you about his experience in that. We have another superintendent in the room of Northwest Regional ESD that there was a consolidation that happened there, and that's exactly what happened. Via economies of scale, they were able to extend the amount of services. That's why I said earlier, very inarticulately, that it's not about, let's say you consolidate an ESD and so an administrator and a central office person goes away, and so you get to turn those two people into a speech pathologist and somebody else who can do school improvement work instead. You get much more. You get access to the whole list of services that larger entity provides.
Thank you. Questions, Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you. I was part of that work group 4 years ago that took a look at ESDs, and we did start out with the intent of redrawing the map. And at the end of the day, we did not do that. Not that I don't think at some point in time that doesn't make sense, but what we ended up doing, the major change we made in the system was the three pilot ESDs with the new governance structure, and which I think was a very positive move. And so I guess I'm wondering at this point in time, because this bill doesn't speak to that at all, and this bill is assuming the status quo, and I like that governance model. And clearly, the chair and I have been talking about these issues, about, you know, combining administrative functions and doing a whole lot of things. I think we need to, whatever we're redrawing, we need to be kind of focused on where the data warehouses are and the administration of those functions as well. And so ultimately, I do think a smaller number probably makes sense, but, you know, administrative functions, data warehouse, and governance structure are all three things that I think need to be addressed before we start redrawing the map. What would comments on that statement, I guess, is what I'd be looking for.
Senator Haas, Senator Cruz, those elements make sense. My conversations with people about the pilots is that the people that are doing that now like it, but that, I mean, and I don't want to sound insensitive, but what I hear from them is it doesn't change anything about the way they do business. I may be oversimplifying, but that's, you know, kind of what I hear. And they like it. They don't want to go back now, but others aren't jumping on board to say, oh, that's good. We like what you're doing. Now, maybe that's just inherently not going to happen because they're currently elected boards, and unless somebody tells them you're going to change, they're not going to change. On the warehouses, the map that I've seen that's currently floating around, it wouldn't have a negative impact on that. And finally, the last one, if I could, you know, my understanding, and I wasn't at the center of this conversation or even close to it 4 years ago, but what I heard or picked up was that it fell flat in some ways because of a concern about jobs in local communities, that was one big concern. We're talking about different jobs in those communities, but we would still, you know, people would still need to have folks out there doing the important work, serving those kids. They just might not need the part-time or full-time superintendent and the person who's cutting the checks, and they'd be able to put that money, you know, more of those dollars, those scarce dollars, into direct services. And so I'm hoping that folks who would be concerned about good jobs and people that, you know, are making good money in their community, they could see other job opportunities that would result.
And follow up?
Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you. I would agree, Ed, you know, for example, if Douglas and Southwest were combined, the Office of the Coast would still need to be there. You still have the logistical issues of having services close to where the, I mean, you can't spend 6 hours driving to deliver a service. It,
right.
it just doesn't work. But I guess I'm, you know, I'm, the governance thing, well, here's one thing that it does save. The last election in Northwest ESD cost zero.
Yeah,
the last ESD election in Multnomah County cost $150,000. So there is a significant difference there. But I guess what I'm looking at is, you know, our intent 4 years ago was to let this thing run for a while and kind of get. Help inform us of how it was working and what the changes were. And quite honestly, I like the new governance structure, and would like to see all of the ESDs go to it. But clearly, if we're going to redraw the map, discussions of that sort need to happen on the front end, because you aren't going to go and redraw the map or redraw. You know, divide the new ESD into seven districts and have people stand for elections and then say, okay, now we're going to change your governance structure. You know, that doesn't work. So at some point, we're going to need to make a decision as to what sort of model we want before we start redrawing lines, I would think. So,
well, I don't think this legislation or any of the legislation we've looked at necessarily means we have to throw out the components, the good parts of that governance structure. One example might be the way these new districts would be elected. I know this legislation sets up the model for elections and directors and terms and,
right.
and all that.
Right.
That's not to say that we need to keep that part of it. So it is an interesting part of this. It's different from the consolidation cost savings, but how these the directors of these new districts are chosen. And I think you're right. I think the governance, the pilot made some, one wise move was that they're not directly affected, they're chosen differently. And maybe we could apply that here, which this bill doesn't do. But I'm just, my point is that we don't have to throw out the good parts of that pilot reform.
Well, I appreciate that, Mr. Chair, but I'm looking at Section 5, and it's the old way of doing business as far as...
Yeah,
you know, so that's why I was addressing, so...
In fact, yeah,
see, I moved these notes last night.
Okay, no further questions?
Thank you both.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee.
Jim Abbott, Ozzie Rose.
I'm not with him.
We saw you drive up together.
I didn't know I signed up.
Ozzie, tomorrow is St. Patrick's Day, so you're a little day early on the show.
I'm really Irish. I'm green all week. Mr. Chair, members of committee, for the record, I'm Ozzie Rose with the ESD Association. The association has no position on this bill. Which probably doesn't surprise anybody. The voting splits along the line of who views themselves as a mergerers and who views themselves as a mergerees. Having said that, if you move the bill, there are some things I think you need to pay attention to. And the issue of merger versus annexation, I'm not sure that's the right dichotomy, but when we did this back in the 90s, there was an issue. If you did it one way, you... lowered the total amount of local money available. If you did it another way, you kept the same amount. And it has to do with how high the tax rates can be, whether you, and I think that the chair says that Steve Meyer's written you something on it, so I encourage you to pay attention to that. Also, the bill, I think, should clarify who's going to be the uncollapsed ESD in the senator's terms. It kind of just says these five counties are going to be in ESD, but it doesn't. I think it's assumed that the ESD that's currently providing the larger service base would be that would continue, but I think it leaves some dispute or possible dispute that you could address. Also, the bill gives the state superintendent the authority to establish administrative offices in some of the counties. And I think you ought to kind of work that over a little bit. I do think that there ought to be a physical physical presence in the outlying districts, but I don't think you ought to, in statute, call it an administrative office, because, you know, hopefully it will be a speech therapist, a special ed person, and a curriculum person, maybe with a secretary running that office. And I'd like you not to call it an administrative office, because the reason we're doing this is to reduce the amount of administration. And it may not make any difference. It may not make any difference, but I just think...
I think you have a future in marketing.
Okay. I have one other idea, and everybody tells us it's really dumb, so I won't share that one.
Can you tell me later?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Mavitt?
That's all I have. Thank you.
Jim Mavitt, Superintendent of the Northwest Regional ESD, President of the Oregon Association of ESDs, and one of the three pilot ESDs. I guess what I have to say is that I want to echo what Ozzy said, and that is that the Oregon Association of ESDs at this time does not have a stance on consolidation or merger or whatever term you like to use. So there's no stance from that organization on this. I will just mention that in 95, Tillamook, Clatsop of Columbia, and Washington counties merged together into one ESD, and that's the ESD that I work for today, and it seems to be working fine. I also want to just mention, for the benefit of Senator Cruz, that the pilot governance is also working well, and I'm frequently asked what are the positives of that model, and I think the greatest positive is that, I don't know whether the committee is aware, but five members are elected by local school boards, and they in turn appoint four others, one from social service, one from post-secondary education, one from the business community, and one at-large member. I think that's been the greatest benefit to our ESD, because we have partnerships now in all those areas stronger than we've ever had before, and it's directly due to the pilot governance. Having said that, it is true that our service delivery model hasn't changed as a result of the governance, but I think it's stronger because of those partnerships.
Okay. Thank you. Questions? Thanks to both of you. I have Scott Pillar on our expected testimony. I don't know if he's here today. Okay. Jonathan Hill and Rob Myers. Welcome.
Thank you.
Start out with your name.
Shuffle a few papers. My name is Jonathan Hill. I'm the superintendent of the Douglas Education Service District. I first returned to Oregon in 1992 after having been exiled in California, and I have been a superintendent of ESDs in Lake County from 92 until 03, and superintendent of the Douglas County from 03 until the present. And what I've distributed to you is a snapshot of the Douglas ESD, and my thought was to just walk through this stuff fairly quickly and picture how this might affect Douglas ESD if we were to proceed with the merger that's in this bill, which has us merging with the South Coast ESD. South Coast ESD currently includes the Reedsport School District, which is within Douglas County boundaries, and then Coos and Curry counties. So if you look at the overview, currently we operate with 14,000 students. We have 13 component districts. Under the expanded model, we would have about 10 to 12,000 new students in the system, and we would now have 23 component school districts in the constellation. As Senator Cruz explained, the bill that was created in 2005 says that the services that drive ESDs is developed in a local service plan, and the local service plan is the product of those school districts. So the notion of bringing 23 school districts together to create a common plan is something that's a little bit unnerving to me. It's been a challenge with 13, but that's what you do. If you see that we have a core budget, state funding of $5.5 million, we, through other activities, through fees for service and other things, expand our general funds to $9 million, and then we leverage that through grants and contracts. So our total budget is about $24 million. And so the four areas that are in the local service plan are the four areas that are here, and I just pulled a service out of each, and I thought to talk that through a bit about how it works. The first service has to do with itinerant services for children who have what are called low-incidence conditions, such as orthopedic impairments, physical impairments, autism spectrum disorder, visual impairments, hearing impairments, those kinds of things. We provide services for those students. The state funding, and I appreciate Mr. Dennis making the observation, the state funding is inadequate, so we add $456,000 out of ESD revenues to provide the services that you see there, which is about 8.5% of our total budget. If we were now to incorporate the South Coast ESD and apply this same service, there's probably very little savings that would take place because the geography you create in that merger is shaped like an L and there's one road. And so the chance that somebody from Roseburg is going to be driving to Brookings to give a service is non-existent. What we might be doing in that model is moving to a total staff of 15 FTE. We may in fact have more expertise because now we can have a specialist in this or that element of it, so that combined ESD would have a greater overall capacity, but in fact, as has been mentioned by some, we would be distributing that service up and down the three-county region. We would not be driving people one end to the other anytime you're in regular contact with kids. The second service we've listed is our wide area telecommunications network, and as you can see, that also takes about 10% of our funding, and with that, we provide what's generally referred to as last-mile connectivity to our remote schools. In this particular service, I think that it would be a net loss for the Douglas ESD. Our current advantage is that we're located on the I-5 corridor. And we right now, in the services we provide, our services are far cheaper to Roseburg Public Schools than they are to Camas Valley or Elkton or Glendale or some of the more remote areas. And it's really our access to I-5 and the technology that's available off the I-5 corridor that is our real asset. And my assumption is, without knowing it in detail, is that there is not a comparable resource that goes for the South Coast part of the state. We're proud, obviously, of our reliability. We've created a successful system, and because we have 6,600 computers on our system, we've also leveraged, which doesn't show here, another $500,000 in grants and contracts, and we've been able to expand the capacity technology systems in all of the smaller communities in the middle and north end of Douglas County, and we're looking to deal with South County next. In school improvement, you'll see that we have a very small piece. This is what people look for in ESDs. We have a very small chunk of the general fund, 1.6%, that provides only 0.8 FTE. That's actually parts of two people. But we've been able to produce $1.5 million in grants and activities with those people. So that's the kind of turnaround that we can that ESDs should be doing. I would imagine that if we were combined with the South Coast ESD, we would not need to add very much staff to double that $1.5 million figure. That's one of the places that would take place. And then as the example I've given you for administrative and support services, is we have a countywide licensed sub-service, so all the substitutes in the county are Douglas ESD employees. And by doing that, instead of working through 13 districts, we have saved, it doesn't show money-wise, we've saved a boatload of time and energy in the 13 districts. We've created a system that works better for the classroom teacher, works better for the sub, and works better for the district. In terms of that notion that ESDs ought to be doing administrative services, this is the poster child of what that should look like. However, if we were to expand that service and be part of the South Coast ESD, this would have to be just duplicated, because I'm not having substitutes driving from Coos Bay to Sub and Roseburg. We would likely build off the plan we have, so there's not going to be a huge amount of savings other than the fact that the system overall is a money saver. So just try to give you a quick picture of what it would look like. I've been in this discussion since 1993. The current model has my fingerprints on various parts of it, so I'd be glad to be of service to you and your committee in any way I can. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Myers.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Rob Myers. I live in Condon. I'm here on behalf of North Central Grant and Wallowa ESDs. I've been coming down here for almost 15 years, and the ESDs have always been clients of mine. And we have we've encountered this same discussion and gone down the same path a lot of times, and thankfully from our perspective, and more thankfully from our students' perspective, the result has been the same, that we've been able to survive based on the legitimacy of why we're there, provably so. And I want to take just a minute, because I'm not, I'm from Condon and everything, but my dad was on the ESD and the school district board in Condon for 43 years. And in 1990, he received the ESD National Distinguished Service Award in New Orleans. I was on the school board, District 25, and on the Gillum County ESD board, and on the North Central ESD board, which I chaired for 2 years. So it's not like we're looking at this through a prism of being uninformed. In 1995, I believe it was, we merged Gillum, Sherman, and Wheeler County ESDs into North Central. So we've been down the merger path. And one of the results of that process was we found that there is, in fact, a point of diminishing return with respect to centralization of services, where the significant barriers of time and distance affect how you deliver services. That's just a fact. And when you're actually delivering the services, it's not theoretical. We actually have to drive from place to place. And I can tell you that the 50 miles between Condon and Spray in the middle of the wintertime is not the same 50 miles between Portland and Salem. They don't even look remotely the same. Those barriers of time and distance exist as a matter of also just simple logistics delivering those services. There's a significant additional expense incurred when you try to deliver those services where areas of sparse population exist, which is where we are. The population of Alaska, the density, is 1.2 persons per square mile. In the service areas that my ESD serve, it's 1.7 people. Not a whole lot different. Less area, I'll admit. But the population density is roughly the same. And it's difficult to look at. One of the issues that we've always had difficulty with before is there's a natural tendency, and I understand it, to try to assess the efficacy of service delivery based on per capita or per ADM, and frankly, it doesn't work because it just leads us to statistical anomalies if you go far enough down the line. When you get into extremely sparse populations, that doesn't work. If you agree, number one, if the benchmark is that you have to deliver the services to begin with, that as citizens of the state of Oregon and as students of those citizens and children of those citizens, they are entitled to a basic service level of education. If you acknowledge that, then how important is the cost? I'm not saying it's unimportant. I'm not saying that it doesn't matter. I am saying that there's a significant additional cost associated with that. And simply by accident of birth and where they were born, it's not fair to deny those children access to quality education. The inequity already exists. And we've always made the distinction between equality or equalization and equity. And there is a difference between the two. The average metro high school in Portland area offers around 200 courses. The average high school in our area offers about 45. Now, is that fair? Probably, because there aren't very many kids. Would it be fair to equalize and say that our kids are also entitled to 200 courses and theirs are entitled to only 15? No. So that's when we have to look at the equity component in all of this and say, what's really fair and what's reasonable? If you got 200 kids in a K-12 district, and there are in a K-12 county, and there are three schools, three districts in that county, and they're 60 miles apart, and it's not feasible and frankly unsafe to try to transport those kids, then you have to do something different. And what I'm saying is, to a certain extent, is that this is one of those situations where a one-size-fits-all solution really doesn't apply. You know, I think you have to acknowledge the uniqueness, and it is uniqueness, of the manner in which Frontier Rural ESDs have to deliver services. Yeah, I mean, as an example, Grant County ESD has 23 part-time, full-time combined employees. 21 of those 23 are involved in daily contact with kids. There's not a substantial amount of money that's wasted in administrative services, and that's true of almost, in fact, all. It is true of all the small school districts that those ESDs serve. There's one administrator in those school districts. Now, you guys have heard this before, but they're the superintendent, typically, and both the grade school and vice and high school principals. That's a role that they assume now, and it works. As long as it works at the local level, I'm not sure that it's one of those if it ain't broke, don't fix it things. And it's hard when you talk about capacity. I think you have to match capacity with the requirement. What's the need? Is there a need for greater capacity? And if the school districts say there's a need for greater capacity at the ESD level, then I think that's something you have to address. But I think this needs to be a bottom-up approach. I think you have to go ask the districts what they think. And when we have fought this battle in the past, and as I said, we have, I can fill this hearing room with county judges and county commissioners and district superintendents and ESD people who will tell you that the current model works. And it works for kids. And that's really, at the end of the day, that's what we're talking about. There's no significant waste involved in the way that ESDs deliver services to school districts, and in turn, by extension, the way school districts deliver services to kids. I mean, are there a few pencils wasted? Probably. But if you want to see what basic service level looks like, get in my pickup and I'll go show you. And we've been trying to fight this battle for a long time. What is basic service level? What is it really? And we thought we'd have an opportunity to do that through the small school study, but we didn't. And be that as it may, it didn't work out that way. I still think that's important. And what the smaller ESDs do is where you can't have economies of scale where there's no scale. And you can't create scale where there's no people. So you employ an aggregated resource model that creates an inverse approach to economies of scale so that you have a shared resource situation between among school districts that the ESD provides that aggregate model to provide those services. If those ESDs disappeared tomorrow, the school district would have to recreate them. That's the only way they can afford to deliver those services. So I'm not going to drone on about this, but I think it's real important to make some distinctions. For all intents and purposes, Frontier Rural ESDs don't have any contract income. And contract revenue is outside the formula. And it's outside the 90-10 resolution process. We don't have that. We don't charge school districts for those services. We provide core curriculum. We provide electives where we can. There hasn't been a music teacher in Condon for 10 years. They've had some AmeriCorps art people, which has been, you know, you take what you can get. So you look at that, see if they do a good enough job, then maybe that's okay. But you speak back to basic service level of education. Are those kids simply by virtue of the fact that they go to school in Condon or Spray or Troy or Prairie City? Should they have art or music? Should they have both? Should they have neither? I mean, to what level of education are they entitled? And I hate the word entitlement, quite frankly. I hate it. And I'm going to hit one more thing, and it was mentioned earlier, and it shouldn't be dismissed because it's important. It's true that the stimulus package, or packages, or however many they're actually going to end up to be, are focused on job creation. And the stimulus packages assign the same weight of value to retention as they do creation. And if that's true, and it is, then jobs mean something out there in those areas. When you get to a certain point in your community, and this argument resonates with some people, and with some people it doesn't. That's the way it works. Local government, education included, becomes a primary source of economic stability and sustainability in a community. The smaller the community is, the truer that is. And so, does the state and the legislature, I guess, have an obligation or a responsibility to see that those communities thrive economically? I don't think so. I'm not going to say that I think that's necessary. What I am going to say is that I think you have that obligation, the state has that obligation to ensure that those kids have access to quality education. And if they don't have access to quality education, if those schools don't exist, those towns are gone. And you might as well shoot them in the head because they're out of there. And so once again, the rural-urban divide, and it exists, and it's the way the world works, just gets wider. And you lose jobs. And where are those people going to get jobs today? Yet, at virtually no significant cost, we can retain jobs in those communities. And it's really important. And whether or not you acknowledge that as a function of education in rural communities is a matter of perspective. The reality is that it matters. It matters huge to those rural communities, and the smaller they are, the more it matters. So, I won't drone on. I could go on a long time about this, but I won't. I'd like to actually let me do one other thing. One other thing. Talk about technology. North Central ESD is a 25% partner in an ORS 190 called Frontier Telnet, and there are a lot of other ESDs in the state who have been proactive with respect to telecommunications. Frontier Telnet is probably the largest licensed microwave, high-capacity, broadband, fast Ethernet telecommunications network, wireless telecommunications network in the country. And North Central ESD is a 25% partner in that. We'll have a 100 megabit connection to John Day in 3 months. We already cover 9 counties. We connect the public safety answering points, law enforcement, emergency services, and soon-to-be hospitals.
I just want to, if I could interrupt here, much of your comments seem to suggest that we're going to close down ESDs, and we're not. This bill is talking about consolidation of some administrative functions and consolidation of some ESDs. And particularly in the places where you mentioned and where you're from, I agree with you that there is an issue of diminishing returns, and that is not what we're going after with whatever we end up here. So I just wanted to make sure that you know we're not trying to phase out ESDs. We're not trying to squeeze money out of them and put them in somewhere over here. We're just trying to play smart here with education money. And particularly from the area where you come from, I don't think anybody is looking at eliminating the very important role that ESDs play.
Well, Chair Hess, I appreciate that. I'm not sure that it, according to the maps that I've seen, that there's a difference in terms of the number of ESDs at the end of the bill as opposed to where we are now. And I'm not sure how we get there unless we eliminate or consolidate them, with all due respect, sir.
Okay. Questions of either of these two gentlemen? Thank you both. Anyone else signed up to testify on this bill? Then I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 964. And I'm going to open up a work session on Senate Bill 344. This is Senator George's bill, at least he's the sponsor, that phases out the county assessor and county surveyor elections. Senator George, do you want a copy? Do you have anything to add here?
Frank, where is it? Thank you, Mr. Chair. Larry George, State Senator, Senate District 13. I appreciate the committee considering this bill to deal with technical positions at the county level. Went and contacted some county commissioners about their preference. The Dash 1 amendments are a necessity for the bill, in as much as what we're trying to get at is to create a broader pool of applicants for these technical positions at the counties, and the Dash 1s allow you to draw from anybody in the entire state to be your assessor or your surveyor. In addition, in doing so, I think we're able to get a letter from the SEIU talking about, from their perspective, how these technical positions should be brought in and be brought so you can have some accountability at the county commissioner level. So I urge the passage of the Dash 1s if we could, Mr. Chair.
Okay. The Dash 1 amendments. Dana, did you?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the Dash 1 amendments remove the appointed assessors and surveyors from the requirement that they be residents of the county where they serve, as Senator George has indicated.
Gotcha. Okay. So, an accountant from Beaverton could serve as the Yamhill County tax assessor.
And Mr. Chair, what the biggest problem we're running into is that for some of these technical positions, there are so few people in the county that actually match that that you're not able to draw from a larger pool. So that's exactly the situation. You may have a number of very technical people who live in Washington County. Washington County's assessor and surveyor are currently appointed. Yamhill County couldn't draw on those resources and appoint that surveyor who may live in Gaston, 10 feet across the county line, to be the county surveyor in Yamhill County. And so what that would do is allow the county commission to appoint a county surveyor from across the line or allow our surveyor to move outside the county if he or she chose to.
Okay. Any questions of Senator George?
I do.
Senator Metzger?
Thank you. Senator George, we've talked about this. I'm very sympathetic to the situation that you have in Yamhill County, but tell me, why is it that the county cannot change their charter to allow this to happen?
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, certain counties, and I believe it's 10 counties, are home rule counties in the state of Oregon, and they're allowed to, through their charter, to do that. The rest of the counties are under the Oregon Constitution, had a list of offices that are elected, county treasurer, county commissioner, some of them, and then under the state statute, which is the statute we're amending right now, have this to the state statute requires that these positions are elected, and so that's why the county commission can't do it locally.
Still a little confused on that. Maybe that's just me. I mean, if you say it's constitutional.
No. Oh, excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Just prohibition.
A few positions are constitutional, which we're not changing here, which is the county commissioner, county treasurer. And then these positions are statutorily required.
Right. So I guess it goes back to my question is, explain to me still, I'm not sure why Yamhill County, since this is not a constitutional prohibition, why the citizens of Yamhill County couldn't change their governing model to have an appointed assessor and surveyor.
Oh, Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, the reason why is because they'd have to change to a home rule county, which they may not want to change their entire charter to do so. They'd have to adopt an entire charter to do that, and they may not want to. And, in fact, the majority of counties have chosen not to adopt the charter provisions just to deal with these technical positions.
Okay. Further questions?
I have a question, Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you. Senator George, during the earlier testimony about this bill, someone testified about the possibility of adding the word ordinance to unless a county charter or ordinance provides otherwise. And my understanding is that would make it optional rather than mandatory. Is that something you considered? And if you want to talk about that just a little bit, appreciate it.
It sure has, Senator Bonamici. I did go ahead and after the hearing had some amendments drafted up for that. But my conversations with county commissioners on that point was that the problem right now is that these are, it's also very political at the local level because you have other county elected officials. And so what they're looking for is a policy decision from the state. So I do have amendments to deal with that issue. However, the question really is that is this a position that should be mandated by the state to be an elected position? And as I understand it is, the county, in essence, could, and I'm not positive on the law on this, but I understand the county could go ahead and opt and pass an ordinance to make it an elected position. But what this would do is, as far as the state law goes, it is an appointed position. So I basically, at this point, when we looked at the ramifications of both, we decided what we should do is make it state policy that it's an appointed position. So.
Thank you, Senator.
Further questions? Senator Morris?
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 344.
Senator Morris moves to adopt the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 344. Any discussion? Seeing none, amendments are adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 344 as amended to the floor with a due-pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves Senate Bill 344 as amended to the floor with a due-pass recommendation. Discussion? Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, Senator George, I appreciate what you're trying to do with Yamhill County, and if you were interested in having a bill that applied to Yamhill County, I'd do it for you. But each of my counties opposes this, and I'm particularly concerned not just because of that, but because it would make my counties have the opposite problem of yours. Now they're going to have to try and redo charters in order to restore what they currently have. And my own personal view is that I see this with the assessor, particularly of anybody. This is a technical job. It should, you know, you have a formula, and you know, you should get the best person possible, knows how to run. It's a management position. Surveyor, and this is my own experience, you know, with the county in which I live, can be extremely political. And when I think of you know, the Board of Commission in years past, anyway, in my county, and the pressures that could potentially be put on someone who was under their thumb to advance certain developers over other people, I thought that was pretty compelling testimony. You know, that's a different issue than what you have. You have tried to find somebody qualified. In Clackamas County, there's lots of people, you know, surveyors and stuff who are qualified for the position. And this is kind of that one shoe, you know, doesn't fit all, and I understand that. So I'm really sympathetic to that. I just don't want to put my county in the opposite position now of having to go through legal work within the county to try and restore, if this is what they want, the elected part of it. And so I can't be supportive of that. Like I say, I'd be happy to do it for Yamhill County, but I just don't want to have to impose that on my jurisdictions.
Other comments?
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Senator George?
As I understand, Mr. Chair, and if you read line 6, as I understood how the bill was drafted, it says, unless a county charter provides otherwise, and I believe that stays in the bill. So as I understand it, and I may be wrong here, we can talk to legislative council, but as I understand it, if your county charter provides otherwise, this bill then wouldn't apply to you. And so we may need to get legislative council in here to explain that. But there was an understanding that the charter home rule counties have one set of rules, and then the other counties have the other set of rules, and I did not want to harm the home rule counties, which are your situation. And as I understand how the bill is drafted, that is correct. That doesn't affect the counties.
Yeah, I know it wouldn't affect Multnomah because they're home rule, but I have very little of Multnomah County, but I do have the others. And so that's just my concern on that.
Okay. Dana, did you have clarification?
Not much to add, Mr. Chair, and I'm happy to contact legislative council if the committee would like, but I believe Senator George's understanding of the bill is correct, as just described.
Okay. Well, Senator Metzger, I guess I see it a different way, that the politics are even stronger on the end of running for these offices. In fact, we had testimony from that last month when we had that yes, there is campaign donations that are required, just like our jobs, and yes, those come directly from the people who are often involved in that kind of work. So I just see it a little differently in terms of removing the politics. I see this as good government campaign reform and to take it to that extreme.
Yeah. Well, like I say, I mean, and that is, I understand that. We all have this different opinion. And I think you're right in that depending on who you are and where you are and what's your time and place, you know, it could be very political or not, depending on the individuals, you know, that are involved. And, but as Senator George mentioned, your county charter can provide that. But if it's already, adhering to a state law, the state law changes, the county charter is going to have to change again. And, I just know that in, some of my folks would like to, who don't necessarily have the difficulty that Senator George has pointed out in Yamhill County, find qualified people, you know, that's just an issue that I would like them not to have to do any other heavy lifting and make kind of their own decision on.
Further discussion?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think both you and Senator Metzger raised the question, or the statement that I wanted to make, was that because this bill provides that a county charter can provide otherwise, I see the bill the same way as the chair does. It gives that county the ability to provide otherwise if they so choose to do.
Okay. If there's no further discussion, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator Bonamici?
Aye.
For now and for just right now, aye.
No.
Aye.
Aye. Measure passes. And Senator George, would you like to carry this bill?
Yes. Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Senator Cruz.
I, I am conflicted on this. I truly am. But I would wonder what would happen if we sent this measure out to the people, what their opinion would be.
Senator Cruz, I wonder what people think when they're trying to choose between two surveyors on the issue.
But Mr. Chair, it's just kind of the perception we're taking away. And I'm not sure I don't agree with what this does, but the perception of the people is we're taking away their right to vote. And without really an explanation to them as to why we're doing it. And that's a bit troublesome.
Can I just clarify something before we continue? Because I thought that Senator Morse had made a motion on the Dash 1 amendments, but I just want to make sure that he also made a motion on the bill.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Okay. Close the work session on Senate Bill 344 and open up the work session on Senate Bill 41.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 41 was before the committee in January, and I would be happy to walk through the Dash 1s, but I suspect that Mr. Rose will do that. I would just note that they do incorporate a provision from Senate Bill 69 that was put forward by the Department of Education. So Mr. Allen may want to speak to that as well, or
okay.
May leave all of it to Mr. Rose, or I can do it, whatever you'd like.
Why don't you walk us through the...
He's probably going to do a better job, Mr. Chair.
Morgan?
Ozzie.
Ozzie Rose, can you come up?
I don't know. When Dana goes through something, I understand it. When Ozzie does, I usually get confused. But other than that...
For the record, Mr. Chair, Mr. Kelly, I'm Ozzie Rose with the ESD Association, and I learned today that people do listen to you. Somebody in the audience wrote me a note explaining merger versus annexation from a tax perspective. She just handed it to me and she walked out. I haven't read it yet. But the House Senate Bill 41 is the result of issues raised by the department over how we were implementing it. And Senator Cruz worked with us. A number of us have worked on it. And it's essentially a bill that will... require the three existing pilot ESDs to remain in that governance structure, and we've called that governance structure shared governance structure, as opposed to the other 17 ESDs, which would continue with the same process. The process works. Mr. Mabbitt shared with you that from his view, one of the values of this process has been the addition of people from the business community, social services community, and higher ed on the boards, and I think all three ESDs would tell you that has been a plus. Mr. Cruz or Senator Cruz raised one of the issues of where money is actually saved, and that's in the election process. The bill, in laying out what we do in the future, spells out about keeping your electors or your boards organized as close as possible on a one-man vote concept amongst your component districts. It assures that all component districts have some way to be represented. I have just one little thing that I think ought to give them some attention, and we'll do it on the other side. That's on page 8. The bottom of page 7, section 7 starts with, an education service district shall organize as a shared governance education district if, and sub A is essentially saying if your local component districts come to the ESD with the resolution, as it, in the resolutions process, they shall reorganize. Section B says, if there's a majority vote, or sub B, excuse me, of the ESD district board approving a petition asking that they be changed to a shared governance. And I think we ought to add in there that if the board bond motion by itself decides we ought to do this, they can do that. Rather than wait for somebody to bring a petition. It might be nitpicking, but it seems to me that ought to be one of the options that we're trying to make this as flexible as possible to move people in this direction, I think. With that, I'll answer any questions.
Senator, run me by that one again.
Well, as I read the bill, there's a section that says they shall reorganize as a shared government ESD if there's a resolution brought to them by the local or the component school districts, and that's pretty straightforward.
Right.
Or if there is a majority vote of the ESD board approving a petition, implying it comes from somewhere, a petition. And I just thought it ought to also say they can, by majority vote, move in this direction without waiting for a petition. And I could say it might be nitpicking, but if we really believe this is a good idea, we ought to set it up so that it is as easy as possible for districts to move in this direction. And again, I don't propose that you're doing it with it now. I'll talk with people and so forth then mend a little bit on their side if we decide that's, excuse me, if the rest of them decide that I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, well, the board could create a petition, so I mean, you know, I don't think that excludes the board.
Right.
Necessarily.
No.
The petition's is a more public way to do it, probably, but I mean, I'm going to talk about that. I'm not sure sub B is exclusionary for the board to take action there. So,
Mr. Allen, do you want to weigh in?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Morgan Allen with the Department of Education. And our concern with this process was a very minor and technical one, and we're fine with the amendments in the bill. In addition to her many talents, Cindy Hunt was also serving as a de facto elections officer for some of these ESDs, and this bill takes care of that problem because I think it clearly outlines an elections process that's done at the local level by the ESDs and their component school districts rather than sort of having a elections clerk also housed at the Department of Education. So we support the Dash Ones, and we appreciate working with Mr. Rose, and it will mean that we won't need to bring Senate Bill 69 back to the committee because I think this will take care of it. It's a two-for-one. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Two for questions. Senator Morrison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe just generally reflect on this bill as it relates to Senate Bill 964. How do we back up and change this action if we adopt 964?
Is that directed at me?
Is there anyone that might comment?
Well, it is a question for you. We did talk about that in 964 about using this sort of appointment process of electors instead of the election process set up in 964. That work?
Well, I think, Mr. Chair, if this bill makes it through the process and Senate Bill 964 or some version of some sort of consolidation plan moves forward, I think we could have resolution amendments from Legislative Council. I think this is separate from the issue of consolidation. This is just allowing ESDs to have that alternative governance model. So they're somewhat related, but I think if you pass this and pass 964 just as is, I don't think it would create a problem because it talks about ESDs generally in here moving towards the shared governance model, and it wouldn't impact any consolidation, and any actions to consolidate by the legislature wouldn't impact their ability to go to this alternative governance model, at least how the bills are written right now. And that's obviously a policy decision for you folks to work out, but I think they would probably be okay. I don't know if Mr. Rose would agree with that assessment. I am not an attorney, and Cindy Hunt is not here to back me up. So,
Ozzie Rose. The Northwest ESD already exists, and they're converted. The Mid Willamette Valley ESD exists, and they're converted. And I think that was your question. Does it do anything, those that are already converted? The High Desert is converted, and under the 964, two or three counties are added to the High Desert, and that would require that they relook at their distribution of the zones and set up so their component districts would vote. It's my assumption that they would continue to be a shared governance district even though you add some other counties to them. And that's part of the reason I raised earlier is that the bill ought to say who they merging with.
Thank you. Are you ready?
Thank you.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 41.
Senator Morris moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 41. Any discussion? Seeing none. Amendment is adopted.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 41 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Morris moves Senate Bill 41 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Seeing none. Any objections to Senate Bill 41 moving to the floor with a due pass recommendation? Seeing none, the measure passes. Senator Cruz, would you like to carry this bill?
Sure.
Okay, any other issues before us today? I'll try not to. Any other bills that I've left off the calendar with you? Colleagues, I did send you a memo about some amendments I'd like you to look at before Wednesday.
Homework.
Homework, yes.
Homework.
Seeing no other issues, we are adjourned.
Just